Welcome to the Recruiting.Technology Podcast, the best in HR automation, productivity, data, and more anywhere on these fine interwebs. Here are our hosts, Jason Roberts and Andrew Godomsky.
Hi, this is Andrew Godomsky, and that is
Jason Roberts.
And this is Recruiting.Technology, the best in bots, automation, and all things algorithmic anywhere on the internet and Facebook.
Every once in a while.
Every once in a while. So
I love how you, I love the wind up for the anywhere. Like we don't show the video for this, but you like lean back and you go anywhere. Like it's a whole thing. I like that. It's
good. Well, I do what I can, you know. So speaking of anywhere on the internet, you know what's not happening on the internet right now is, you know, I'm not seeing a ton of announcements on funding, new tech, new stuff. That's really slowed down the last few weeks, don't you think?
It has. I actually scrolled through. I was looking to see what happened. Poor George LaRock on HR Wins. He posted like an 820K seed round. Like, I'm not sure that would normally even get attention.
That wouldn't even get traffic.
This guy, somebody way out in the UK raised a seed round from their, you know, their uncle and their grandma of 828K for a culture thing, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, you and I were just talking about this, but we, you know, iSIMS made an interesting announcement about a partnership with Microsoft and their Dynamics. And that's I thought that was interesting. I got to find out a lot more about that. But, you know, Dynamics is one of the, it's one of the few FedRAMPed areas of the government. And the government is going nuts right now. Government work is off the chain, right? Yeah. And people are figuring out, how do we hire? How do we do? And, you know, they're lost on systems.
Then they have to find a way to get themselves FedRAMPed.
Well, what's interesting is I'm curious to see if by having a partnership with Dynamics, if that rolls underneath.
Probably not. They're going to have to do their own. They'll have to do their own FedRAMP. Yeah. And I bet they can, but they're going to have to do their own.
But there's not a lot of traffic, but, outside of that. And then there's, you know, what we have seen though is there's been the traffic has been online, but it's been people doing, you know, the Zooms and videos online, all this virtual pseudo conference stuff.
Yeah. And if you've ever wanted to like interact with recruiting gurus, now is the time to do it, man. Let's see, though, he hasn't done it in a while. Mike Cohen had like just a virtual hangout. You can come hang out.
Yep.
Work together for a while. I actually enjoyed that quite a bit. That was in the first couple of weeks of this mess, when I had time. And now I feel like I'm working harder than I've ever worked in my life.
Yeah. I'm the same way. It's 12 hour days right now.
Yeah. It's absolutely, I'm super mellow because I'm kind of leaning back. I blocked a chunk of my day and, I need some downtime. I need to sit back for a bit.
I mean, so the on a weekly basis, this is what I've seen. So you can talk. So Mike had his, Mike Cohen was doing a thing. Jason Averbrook is doing a weekly dialogue about HR transformation. That's pretty good.
Career Crossroads. Jerry and Chris have their...
Jerry and Chris are doing their Thursday happy hour, I guess, on Thursdays.
It's open to everybody. They announce it publicly. So you don't have to be a member to go and participate. So I'm not a member. So I did participate. It was fun. It was great.
Yeah. And then Chris Russell's been doing something for RecTech Media. I don't know if that's still going, though. I haven't seen that in a while.
Since the Zoom bomb, I haven't seen any more announcements.
Since they got hacked by whatever.
They got Zoom bombed by somebody that decided to jump in and He said online, I don't know if he was just messing around or not, but he said somebody jumped onto their thing and started playing Pornhub videos.
Yeah, nice. Hung Lee and Recruiting Brain Food have been doing regular stuff. I think he did a 24-hour marathon with like 24 different folks or something.
You know what's funny? I hear Hung Lee's name a lot. I don't know him.
Good guy. He had me on his Brain Food show. Oh, I don't know, maybe about a month ago. And yeah. Then, I will say is that he's got tremendous followers. He reposted something that I put out, and like I got like 600 like LinkedIn requests that day.
Wow, that's good. That's good. Yeah, he and I just have never met for some reason. So
yeah.
One of these days we'll have to connect.
But you're right. I mean, there are lots of opportunities to engage with folks. Michael Goldberg out of Dallas is doing stuff almost every day, and he's also doing it for people who need career advice or job seeking advice.
Yeah, I saw you on his stream at some point.
Yeah, he asked me to come in and talk about how would you use data to help you find a job. Like, how should you track yourself? Are there things you should do? Are there times where it's more beneficial to reply to a job than not? That type of stuff.
Oh, that's cool. That's actually a really cool conversation to have in the current environment. Yeah, it's funny. I look at this and I see some of the paid conferences that are out there. Like, some of them have just pivoted to say, yeah, this is going to be free. Like the HRTX thing.
Yeah.
They just did I think they just did theirs for free, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. Before, it wasn't even that much. You know.
Yeah. So, but like SourceCon, they were charging, I think, full freight for theirs, like an actual conference charge. I'm not sure how many people took them up on that. And then you've got, who else was the, oh, so I've been asked to join two, vendor sort of organized conferences they're doing for free. And those are interesting. So I did Hirschwell's deal. I jumped in right after Steven's sort of keynote kicking the thing off. Okay. Hirschwell has some cool stuff they're rolling out. They're rolling out a deal that's has deep integrations with ATSs. And they don't say this, but I think they're just this side of the CRM. Like, it's a CRM where, you know, CRM that has built-in candidate generation. Like, they have their own candidate pool, which sounds way more compelling than a CRM that shows up with a empty database.
Well, and that's what those guys have been trying to do. They, you know, I remember 24 months ago, I kind of said, you guys are either going to become a system of record or you're not. And it's important to make the distinction.
Yeah, well, the only real system of record in our business is the ATS. Everybody else just connects to that, right? And I think it's okay for them to connect to the ATS as a system of record. But they do. I was digging it, man. I thought it was pretty good. Anyway, I presented on that thing, and then the guys at Wade and Wendy are doing a recruiting AI conference.
Oh wow!
That's going to be, and theirs is using a new technology I've never seen before. That basically has virtual breakout rooms, one-on-one break-off conversations for networking. Like, it's an actual virtual conferencing platform.
Oh wow!
They're using. It's not just like, hey, I threw a bunch of Zooms together. It's pretty sweet. So I think I'll get that out to everybody when it gets more formalized. But I'm pretty excited about theirs. I think that one will be good.
Well, and I think that this is part of our topic for today is what are HR tech, what are recruiting technologies going to have to do to, you know, if you're not going to HRTX, if you're not going to Social Recruiting Strategies Conference, or you're not going to HR Tech in October, you know, and you're not showing up and renting a 10x10 space or a 30x100 foot space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, driving people to your booth and doing the dinners and all this other hoopla, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to be very sad. I really enjoy HR Tech. And I really would be all the, I was wondering about what would happen with HR tech this year. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, I'm not sure I want to get out in the crowd. I love HR tech. Like, I love HR tech. I'm not sure I want to go out to Vegas right now.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be allowed back in the house if I go to Vegas. Yeah. So I'll have to quarantine. But I do think that, you know, there was a you know, so what are they going to do? And I think that the first thing is we might need to kind of remove some of our bias about buying behavior.
Okay.
To allow more virtual selling to occur. There was just in the news, I guess, yesterday, Bank of Montreal has announced that they're going to stay about 85% virtual.
Yeah. I'll tell you. So I've been virtual for decades now, over a decade now. And I only go into the office when a vendor insists on meeting with me personally, like in person. Like if somebody's like, hey, I'm coming to town. I want to meet with you. And I, you know, I buy a bunch of HR tech, and it's a little uncomfortable. Like I'm like, I'm great doing this over the phone, man. I'm great talking to you this way. I don't have to meet you in person. If we end up at HR tech, great. I'll come by the booth. We'll talk. I'll meet you in person. That sounds awesome. We don't have to do this in person. We don't have to, you don't have to buy me a lunch in order for me to like your stuff. It might be good stuff anyway.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. I mean, so this Bank of Montreal thing was an interesting study because they were concerned that they weren't going to be able to do the investment banking part of their business, where people are normally moving and shaking related to whether it's large scale investments or what have you. You know, or anything related to investment banking, they didn't think they were going to do without the personal touch, and they were proven wrong. They were able to train, you know, their reps, you know, which are pretty savvy folks, you know, to do all this stuff via Zoom and engage and keep it interesting and close deals. And I think in HR technology, we're naturally using the demo anyway, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to, it's usually SaaS oriented. So you got to be able to show it. So then now the question is, how do we use, you know, how do we sell when we know we're not going to these conferences and using that as a way to engage with our current customer base, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we still have these virtual conferences that can help move the needle for us.
Well, maybe they'll get better at like marketing and retargeting and some of the stuff that I mean, honestly, focusing on conference driven marketing is a little old school. It's not sort of the thing that you do anymore. Yeah. Now it's more about getting your name in front of somebody that fits a profile. When they go to your site, capturing that, retargeting them so that your logo shows up 7 times because it takes 7 impressions to make a, I mean, that's the way that consumer marketing is done.
Yeah.
And it works in B2B as well.
Yeah. I think that this is a wake up call to recruiting technology companies about how they message, how they track, their ability to do attribution and retargeting, you know, really focusing in on how much of my sell can be done on the website to get people as close as possible to yes.
Yeah.
And then I think that they've got, you know, these organizers have also got to start raising the bar on the quality of the learning that's going to be at these conferences, you know.
Yeah.
It can't just be, oh, I want to go see Jason because he's cool. Although that's important.
Thanks. No, I agree. I think it's, well, God, I don't know what HR tech looks like. And if they try to pull it off in October, which is a reasonable time to try to do a show, would be October, right? So you can do that. What does that look like? Because I don't think we all want to be in like a giant crowded vendor space with 400 booths. Like, I don't think we want that.
And I don't think that, you know, I mean, I speak as a person who lives in New Jersey, who frequents New York. I'm not convinced that everybody wants me all snuggled up next to them, you know, in the rows in, you know, 1,000 people deep, and I'm in the middle of the room. Right.
Yes.
Right.
I agree. Most people do not want you snuggled up next to them.
Thank you. But I think, you know, but even the way that we've designed these conferences in terms of, we tend to put several hundred people into a room or several dozen into a breakout session. And then now we have people who know how to moderate at those volumes or lead or present at those volumes. That's all very different now.
Do you think the experience economy goes away in this? Because there was this big shift that went from sort of consumer-driven behavior, which is, I think Gen X is probably the last of the true consumers, right? We like to have lots of stuff, and we like to have nice stuff, right? And then millennials are very experience-focused, right? They will pay for the experience that they want to have. So whether it's, I want to travel the world, or I want to meet these people, or I want to see and touch and feel this technology, whatever it is, it's very much experiential. So I feel like there was sort of a surge in conference stuff in the last several years. I think it probably has to do with that sort of experience culture and that desire for experiences. I'm wondering if there's a experience culture shock that kicks in because of all this. What do you think?
You know, like any good consultant, I'll tell you it's both. Right. But I do believe that, this is in my head because I read something like this recently, but they were talking about the article was something about how people will have different reactions around re-engaging back in society. And some of it will be maturity, where people will have more comfort doing more things over time. And that's a group of folks. There are some people that will make significant life shifts and they will stop doing things likely permanently. Right. And then there will be some people that will pretty much go back to just how things were. Right. So realize that there's a scale here. There's a spectrum. But I wonder if what's going to happen is, we're going to have virtual conferences. We're going to have in-person conferences. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to start retargeting for the right folks. I mean, you know, there are thousands of people who show up at CHRM, right, every year.
Yeah.
Do we really think that they'll get 20,000? Probably not. Could they get 16,000? And maybe 8,000 are brand spanking new, but fit a certain persona that say, I'm one of these people, it's business as usual, or I don't have those fears. So do they start marketing and say, I'm going to have these conferences, and the people who are showing up, they have already qualified themselves as, I don't have fear about being there.
Okay. Here's an off the wall option. Antibody passports. Have you seen the passport thing?
Yeah, I've heard about this. This is an awesome. This has got protected class and discrimination written all over it.
So there's talk. I'll catch everybody up. There's talk of issuing basically antibody passports. So you basically are tested. It says, I have had COVID or I have the antibodies that protect me from this thing. I can't be a carrier as a result of that. So you've got this this thing. By the way, none of this is proven yet. I'll just lay that out now. Yeah. None of this is proven. So the question is,
voodoo you're speaking right now.
Yeah. So, but there's talk of, you know, once we know that the antibodies actually do something, which I don't understand why they wouldn't, but okay. I always thought that once you caught the flu, you didn't get the flu like multiple times because your body does something so that you don't keep getting it, but whatever. But if you have this thing and you get you've got the antibodies saying you can fight it, that, you know, they might use that to decide anyone who has not been exposed should stay home in the future. If we have another dip, right, where we all need to shelter in place or whatever again, everybody who has this passport can go out and do what you need to do. It doesn't matter. But if you've never been exposed, you should stay home because, you know, it's more dangerous for you.
Yeah.
This
is one of those things where someone will make money off of this and this is a bad idea. But
yeah. Well, so I work with somebody in Prague, right? And she has to have a pass to leave her house to go to the grocery store once a week.
Yeah.
Like she and the police will stop you and show proof that you're allowed to go outside.
Papers, please. And papers. Where are your papers?
Seriously. Well, seriously, that's how it is now in that particular geography. And I think there are many others that are like this as well, but where the government's requiring you to do certain things. There's contact tracing apps and stuff. I'm super curious to see what happens here in the next little bit.
I don't think it's too crazy to assume that you could, you know, let's just say that you were to link this information to other government issued identifications, right? Yeah. That's not crazy to assume, especially let's just say you're doing like, how tough would it be to go ahead and register with Global Entry that I've got antibodies? That's just me doing it online. And then if I had an app that showed my Global Entry on my phone, I could take it around. Now, you know, there's all kinds of things that, you know, you could do. But I do think that, you know, getting back to recruiting technology, I think they're going to have to think about marketing and figuring out people are going to make their decision processes differently, which they've always done anyway. But the venues that we have to influence them and educate them have shifted in terms of those venues' populations.
Yeah. Well, and the conferences do you start offering two experiences, right? So you could have the experience of I'm at the show, I'm around people, but also the live stream version,
right?
Do you offer kind of the lower cost live stream only, maybe offer video replay, whatever? Do you offer that as kind of a lower priced option for going to the conference? How do you engage the networking? Because I don't go to conferences because I think the speakers are super great. Most of the time I've heard what the speakers are going to say somewhere else, but there's usually one or two talks. I'm like, oh, that was great. I learned something new there, but I'm there to hear what I'm there for the in-between, right? The in-between time when I'm talking about a specific problem of a specific, situation, and there's somebody super smart that has a new idea for me. And that interaction, that networking is really what's of value.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for our listeners, hate to burst your bubble, but the average person who speaks at multiple recruiting conferences a year doesn't make up a brand spanking new presentation for every single time they speak on stage, you know, once a month, once every other month.
in general, it's one presentation, two presentations with little variants, and they update them annually, semi-annually, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but, so it's like, oh, I've seen so-and-so do that shtick before. Like,
there's one conference group that they give you the topic, and then you've got to go figure out your shtick around that topic.
Oh, it's the guys at BLR.
That's the ones. Drives me nuts. I'm like, I can't reuse any of my stuff.
Yeah, I've got a virtual conference for them coming up, and I have to come up with something brand new. And by the way, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that you come up with brand new ideas, but you do have to massage and create new. But I do think that the virtual conferences can charge more if they also give more. And so, as an example, why am I not getting, you know, normally I get slides, or I get the presentation or slides, you get a recording, right? When you register for a conference. Okay, that's like table stakes now. Like, yeah, if they weren't doing it before, you're definitely doing it now.
Yeah.
But why not also suggest to the speakers, okay, but you've also got to give them tools or how-tos or resource kits. So if someone says, let's all talk about, you know, how to do, you know, sourcing for people who are in cybersecurity, you know, and then there's like an hour-long presentation about that, you know, should it really just be the 8 to 10 slides they went through, or should that be like an 80 page slide deck with all kinds of tips, tricks, Boolean that can be copy pasted, all that stuff?
So here's the challenge on the conference organizer side. They're typically not paying people to do those presentations. Those presentations, for the most part, are free, unless you're a keynote, and the keynotes will many times be paid.
Well, and that's the trick, right? So now the trick is, do I pay Mike Cohen? I'll pick on him because we were talking about Batman earlier.
Yep.
Do I pay him $10,000?
Batman, nope. He's that way.
I see him. I see him right there. Do I pay him $10,000 for license to IP? You do the presentation, and now I'm going to be able to sell your little kit, not just at this conference, not just to the people who attended, but for anybody who comes to my website and wants to download it.
So that would be brilliant. That would be like, in fact, that would be the appropriate pivot for a SourceCon. If SourceCon were to do something like that, where they go to these experts, they get training tutorials, whatever, you hear them speak on their thing. And what if instead of a conference, it was quick hits? Like each presentation, hear Mike Cohen talk for 40 minutes. Yeah, 15 minutes, whatever, on this thing, and get the tools and takeaways that go with that.
Right.
And you charge $50 for that thing and the tools, and Mike can get a little piece of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm just about finished with this curriculum for AIHR. It's like ended up being like 20 hours of data analytics curriculum, right?
Jeez.
But it also comes with like reference sheets and like, here's the visuals that you should use, here's how you build them, all that stuff, right? But that experience, which was built for virtual anyway, I don't see a lot of that. And I think that sometimes what we're doing is we're going to these places and we're scribbling and we're trying to do the recording. And I wonder if we raise the intellectual property or the use case, or shift the use case of these, you know, of these presentations, mm-hmm, where you have to have a downloadable widget that goes with it. All of a sudden, the fact that you're in the room or not in the room doesn't matter as much.
Interesting.
So we'll see. I mean, and by the way, good on, I mean, I can see like the guys at like Symphony, formerly Smashfly, like they have their Transform conference that they're going to do.
Like, wait, what Symphony, if, like, formerly Smashfly? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I think Symphony bought Smashfly or whatever that is. So how that works.
Something happened there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question is like, would that be pretty cool? Like, if during that Transform conference, you knew you were getting like 15 step-by-step how-to presentations.
Would be good.
You know, I mean, you're right. SourceCon's a real, any, SourceCon's a really good example of that. Like, because the networking part of SourceCon, like the hackathon, that's fun, right? But like, no one's going around like record, like, what are you doing? Like taking snaps of like Susanna Fraser's like screen as she's in the hackathon. You're not doing that.
Well, you could run a virtual hackathon. Like you could run the hackathon as like as a Zoom driven sort of event. I think that's super doable. And I think they should, honestly. I think that's a thing that should happen for them.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting. Like how do you,
I'd watch
like,
it.
Do you think like Dean would be like, do you think like the folks like Dean and Derek and all these others, like they would be like, oh yeah, I'll just record my screen and then I'll hunt for an hour. I'll record my screen and then you can see that recording.
I've seen Dean's done that before. Dean's done that before. I've seen Dean like do exactly that thing. So I don't know. I think there's new ways to do stuff. I think that, man, they've got to lean in on that community pretty hard these days. And we'll see what happens in the next little bit.
Yeah, there's opportunity here for pivoting, for sure. I think the more that recruiting technology and recruiting technology can demand some of those things from these conference organizers to say, how are you, you know, what are you giving these delegates? And oh, you're giving them these things, that's going to put me in a position to say, yeah, I want to sponsor that because now I know 200 people are getting a downloadable resource with my name on it that I'm influencing.
All right, Andrew, one final question as we wrap up today.
Yes.
I'm super curious. Speaking of Michael, the Batman Cohen, he's horned on in on your territory this past week, and he wrote on analytics.
I saw it.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about this?
Well, you know, it's look, you know, if Batman wants to see what it's like to try to, you know, fly, good for him. You know. Yeah, but
no.
No, I think he did well.
His write-up was nice.
Yeah, I thought it was a fine article and I gave him some props online about it. I think I do think this is that what we track to understand our own productivity is different than how we interpret data so we can make enterprise-wide decisions or really big decisions, right?
Right. It's about the audience, right? It's all about the audience of that data, right? So I think for the audience he was speaking to is exactly the right thing. I get in arguments all the time about the most important thing to measure for a sourcer. And sourcers always disagree with me, and they're right in one way. The most important thing for them to measure for themselves is going to be different. For me, the only thing that matters is whether they make a hire or not.
Yeah, you like, and I have a standing disagreement on this.
Yeah, but you know what? That's the next topic. We'll talk about this.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the metrics of sourcing. And
yeah, well, actually, and so preview, we'll talk about that on the next one. But a preview is the Association of Talent Acquisition Professionals, ATAP, yep, just wrote a white paper on sourcing.
Oh, yeah.
And so so myself, Mary Grace Hennessy, Jerry Crispin, a whole bunch of people involved. Good stuff. I really like where it ended up. Gigi, Glenn Guttmacher was in on it. A bunch of other good folks. And I think where we kind of ended up is some really interesting concepts around where conversion, how you talk about sourcing using certain terminology, so we can start kind of when someone says an audience, what does that mean? When someone right. says a source, what does that mean?
Yep.
And so some good stuff.
Nice. All right.
All right. Sounds good. So we'll roll it out on behalf of all of us here at Recruiting Data Technology. I'm Andrew Godomsky.
And I'm Jason Roberts.
And that's it, folks.
Adios.
Adios.
Thanks for joining us. Please remember to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Follow us on Facebook or reach out to us directly through our website at www.recruiting.technology.